On today's show, we'll demonstrate how the PC spirit is the spirit of the age, also known as the spirit of the world.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Have you ever noticed how something will become a cultural craze and suddenly everybody's on board and everybody's into this and Hollywood's campaigning for it and the media's all for it and everybody rallies around a particular cause, and how often those causes are contrary to biblical values? Have you ever noticed that it's something deeper that is often connecting these various groups? We're going to open it up. We're going to dig deep. We're going to look at the influence of highly educated, rich, white elites in America. Black Lives Matter movement founders and witchcraft. We're going to see if we can put some pieces together here that seem very much unrelated. And then a question I want to put out for your consideration. I want to take some calls on this. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I want to put this question out for you. In recent days, there have been athletes who were the only ones on their team to remain standing while everyone else knelt either before the national anthem or during the national anthem. One of them was a white player, white pitcher with the San Francisco Giants. The other was a black player with a basketball player with the Orlando Magic. So here's the question. Is it harder for a white athlete not to stand? If you do that, you're branded a racist. Or for a black player not to stand and seem to be disloyal to a cause for your own people? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the broadcast. First, let me lay out for you what I mean when I speak of the spirit of the age, or the spirit of the world. And here's what's important for us to take hold of. The whole purpose of this broadcast, in terms of why we're on the air at all, is to bring a spiritual perspective, a biblically-based perspective, into everything we deal with. This is not just a preaching show like you have on other broadcasts. This is not just a news show like you have on other broadcasts, but we're doing our best to bring a spiritual, biblically-based perspective into the world around us and analyze what's happening in the world based on that spiritual foundation, which means we're often looking behind the headlines and behind the scenes in order to come to an understanding. So there is the world, meaning the physical world that God has created. We're talking about the natural world, animals, plant life, things like that. But then there is the spirit of the world, the spirit of the age. Look at what's written in 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2, beginning in verse 15, John writes, "Do not love the world, neither the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." It's not talking about the people of the world. It's not talking about the natural physical environment, but the spirit of the world. "For everything in the world, the desire of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, and the boasting of life is not from the Father, but from the world. The world is passing away along with its desire, but the one who does the will of God abides forever." So there is a world system, a world mentality, a worldly ideology that's very different than what God has established. Look at what John wrote in 1 John chapter 5, verse 19. One of these blanket statements that we find throughout the Bible, 1 John 5:19, "We know that we are of God, and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one." So it's saying there is another influence, there is another spirit at work. It influences the way people think and see this world, and we are operating based on a different spirit. Take a look in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul writing this time, and he says this: in their case, the people who don't believe, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelieving so that they might not see the light of the good news of the glory of Messiah, who is the image of God. Now, that may sound very insulting to people. Are you saying we're all full of the devil, demon-possessed? No, that's not what the text is saying. What the text is saying is that there is a spirit of this age, a spirit of this world, and people who do not know the Lord are blinded by this spirit. Now, obviously, from the perspective of people in the world, religious fanatics like me, you're the ones that are blind, believing this crazy book about a Bronze Age God. I mean, they have their views of us as bigoted, hate-filled, homophobic, fundamentalist, whatever, religious fanatics. We're simply saying, well, we believe your perspective is blinded. Your perspective is missing something. Now, here's a big question. Why did the world hate Jesus? Yes, there were many crowds that followed him. Many of the Jewish people of his day believed that he was the Messiah or believed that he was a great prophet and revered him. The leadership ultimately stood against him, but he was rejected. He was killed. No one on the planet ever exhibited love the way he did, compassion the way he did, goodness the way he did. He was a light shining in the darkness, and yet he was killed. Or should I say he was a light shining in the darkness because of which he was killed? Because the world wants to snuff out the light. Look at what Jesus said to his disciples in John chapter 15, shortly before he died. John chapter 15, beginning in verse 18, he said, "If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But you are not of the world, since I've chosen you out of the world. Therefore, the world hates you. Remember the word I spoke to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they'll persecute you also. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also." We'll stop there. So Jesus is saying that the same spirit of the world, spirit of the age, that rejected him will reject us. Now, interesting account in the Bible. There were two major leaders spoken of, Herod and Pilate, and they were not friends. They were foes. But they became friends in their joint rejection of Jesus. They joined together in siding with the darkness rather than the light. They joined together in giving an innocent man over to be killed, and they became friends. It's interesting to see how people in the world will unite around something, often unite around standing against us, those of us who hold to biblical standards and value God's view of things. There'll be a unified front against us because you wonder what else connects some of these things. All right, so I wrote an article, "Is the PC Culture Dictated by White Elites?" You think, where is this coming from? All right, stay with me. We're going on an exploratory journey today, all right? Is the PC culture dictated by white elites? Now, if you're watching this, there's a picture of a guy, you know, stock photo. Just anyone can use it online for any purpose. He may not have planned to have his face used. By the way, we don't pick the pictures. The websites where they're posted pick them, but he may not have signed up for this. But there was a major survey that was recently done that discovered some very, very interesting things, published in 2018, late in 2018. I just discovered it, and I thought, wow, we've got to talk about this, because right now one of the big issues is the charge of white supremacy in our culture. Obviously, there was historic white supremacy. Is it still here in any way in our culture? Should it be resisted? And you've got the PC thing is that we're all going to stand against white supremacy. Wouldn't it be interesting if the ones most influencing some of the discourse are actually highly educated, wealthy white elites? Wouldn't that be fascinating? And wouldn't it be interesting if the masses of people actually resist the PC culture? Okay, so there's a study called Hidden Tribes, a study of America's polarized landscape. And it came out in 2018. It was based on a nationally representative poll with 8,000 respondents. 30 one-hour interviews, and 6 focus groups conducted from December 2017 to September 2018. So it's a serious work. And Professor Yashica Mount in The Atlantic summarized the findings of this. So this was almost 2 years old, but quite relevant. The report's 160 pages long. I downloaded it, went through a lot of it, but the summary of Mount is really helpful. So according to the study, as of 2018, while 25% of Americans were traditional or devoted conservatives, only 8% were progressive activists. As for the 67% who did not fall into either of these categories, they were dubbed the exhausted majority. So Mack wrote, among the general population, a full 80% believe that political correctness is a problem in our country. Even young people are uncomfortable with it, including 74% ages 24 to 29 and 79% under age 24. On this particular issue, the woke are in a clear minority across all ages. All right, let's pause there. The feeling you would get is that everybody is PC today. There's this tiny minority of these bigoted old people like me, these religious fundamentalists and fanatics, these closed-minded hillbillies, basically, you know, the caricature, right? That's the caricature. No, I'm not a hillbilly, but that's, or any of the above, except I am old, but that's older, 65, not old, but older. Everything else is just the exaggerated, ridiculous, stereotyped, untrue accusation. But the point is you get the feeling like everybody's in, but it's really a small minority kind of pulling certain strings. And then there's the spirit of the age. There's the spirit of the world. There's the PC spirit that basically everybody has to bow down to. So it may be a small minority pulling strings, but then everybody else somehow has to bow down to it and accept it. And if you don't, you're excluded. We're going to do our best to expose that today. And one of the ongoing purposes of the Line of Fire is to help you to stand strong, to swim against the tide, to go against the grain, to be a God pleaser more than a people pleaser. If you really want to love your neighbors yourself, you have to start by loving God. Otherwise, you really won't help your neighbor.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. What do you think is harder, to be a white athlete today refusing to kneel with your teammates, or to be a black athlete today refusing to kneel with your teammates? As I was doing a poll on Twitter over the weekend, it was virtually a split right down the middle, either evenly divided on each point or saying equally hard. But we'll come back to that. And it's an interesting question to process because whoever we are, whatever our unique situation in society, young, old, male, female, black, white, other ethnicity or color, wherever we are educationally, wherever we are financially, wherever we're situated, our particular set of beliefs, we have unique situations around us that can create more opposition, that can present unique challenges. And what we each need to do is figure out how to be strong and stand and do what's right wherever we are. It's one thing to read about some Christian tortured in Romania for their faith, last generation, like Pastor Richard Wurmbrand, or a Christian in prison in China today. But for the most part, we're not getting thrown in prison for our faith here. Okay, you have some rare instances, a pro-life protest or something like that, but oh, you're not getting thrown in prison, you're not getting tortured to death. But there are other things we are hit with, and peer pressure, and sometimes pressure in terms of getting ahead in the workplace or getting ahead educationally or having an open door as an athlete? And will we stand and do what's right, or will we capitulate and cave in? So interestingly, in this Hidden Tribe study released late in October in 2018, it says this, that the people group that has the biggest problem with PC culture, 88% of those surveyed were Native Americans, called American Indians, in the survey. They had the biggest problem with PC culture. And even though white Americans, others, you go down the list, they're lower. All right, Hispanics were high on the list. Black Americans were a little lower, but still overwhelmingly against the PC culture. It's really quite fascinating. So whites are ever so slightly less likely than average to believe that political correctness is a problem in the country. 79% of them share the statement. Instead, it's Asians, 82%, Hispanics, 87%, and American Indians, 88%, who are most likely to oppose political correctness. As for African Americans, while they were not as strongly opposed to PC attitudes as the other groups listed, still 3/4 of African Americans oppose political correctness. Now you say, well, maybe things have shifted. Maybe things have shifted now because there has been with the BLM movement and other things, there's been more of a social consciousness raised. So people are more embracing of the PC spirit. You might argue that, but on the flip side, the cancel culture, the extremes to which this is going have prompted even arch liberals like Bill Maher to speak out against it. Yeah, it's really interesting to watch what's happening. And again, to try to connect the dots and ask who's pushing this, who's driving this. Here, listen to what Bill Maher said. He's talking to Barry Weiss, who worked at the New York Times, but ended up quitting. Her resignation letter is widely publicized online. Bill Maher says to her, Barry, the fact that they call you a centrist or right winger. I mean, if a hip, millennial, Jewish, bisexual girl living in San Francisco is not a liberal, who is these days? And listen to what she says. What cancel culture is about is not criticism. It is about punishment. It is about making a person radioactive. It is about taking away their job. And then she said this, it's not just about punishing the sinner. It's not just about punishing the person for being insufficiently pure. It's about this sort of secondary boycott of people who would deign to speak to that person or appear on a platform with that person. And we just see very obviously where that kind of politics gets us. If conversation with people that we disagree with becomes impossible, what is the way that we solve conflict? It's violence. We skip to the end of the report. Professor Mauck summarizes the findings, and he says this, compared with the rest of the nationally representative polling sample, progressive activists are much more likely to be rich, highly educated, and white. What do you know? And he says, these are the kind of people, in other words, who are in charge of universities, edit the nation's most important newspapers and magazines, and advise Democratic political candidates on their campaigns. Oh, so it's this small minority that somehow, according to this report, is advocating for this extreme PC culture, but then people just bow down to it. And then whatever's out there, this is the great theme of Hollywood, they're going to take it on. And it's the great theme of the media. They're going to take it on. They're going to become champions. And people just buy into it. And now it's kneel or else. It's quite an extraordinary moment in which we find ourselves. So let's dig a little deeper here. I wrote a book, came out last year, Jezebel's War with America. And the thesis of that book was the same demonic powers that operated through Queen Jezebel 3,000 years ago in Israelite history, and operated through a woman that Jesus called Jezebel in the New Testament 2,000 years ago, those same demonic powers are operating again today, and they have certain characteristics when you group everything together. One is sexual seduction. We know that's associated with Jezebel in the Bible. So the pandemic of porn, it is, I mean, in terms of a moral pandemic, it is. It's worldwide, and it's having an incredibly destructive effect with internet access and kids as young as 8 accessing porn for the first time. So there's the sexual seduction of a generation. Then you have the extreme idolatry that comes with this movement. Extreme idolatry. So the worshiping of other things and other gods rather than the one true God. And with that, in the ancient world, when you had idolatry, you had baby killing, sacrificing babies to idols. So the baby killing spirit. This is different from some 15-year-old girl who was raped and is terrified, doesn't know what to do, and secretly, without her parents knowing, has an abortion and struggles with her decision. I'm talking about the shout your abortion militant scratching the Supreme Court doors during the Kavanaugh hearings. I'm talking about that baby-killing spirit. So you have that. Then you also have the emasculating of men. This is very Jezebelic and taking any type of male leadership or authority, or the husband and father just portrayed as a jerk and an idiot and a fool in so much of media for so many years. You add that in. Then you add in the war on gender. It's part of the emasculating of men and then turning women into men. Again, we're not talking about all kinds of stereotypes where girls like ballet and guys like football and there's nothing in between. We're not saying that a tomboyish girl is Jezebelic. No. But there is a war on gender distinctions in our day that is unmistakable. Then you add in the rise of witchcraft, sorcery. These are all things associated with Jezebel in the Bible. And then the silencing of the prophetic voices, you can very clearly see the spirit of Jezebel, as I defined it, operating in America and other nations as well. That book somehow struck such a chord that the first printing sold out the first week, which never happened with anything that we wrote. It was one of those things that got our attention, got the publisher's attention as well. Well, now, let's go a few months ahead, as that book came out a year ago, and you look at the BLM movement, not the statement that Black Lives Matter, which we do, which we affirm, but the BLM movement, and you look at some of the founders, and we know that they are all, the three founders, women, are radical feminists. We know that in their official statement, there's not a single reference to fathers in the statement, but multiple references to queer and trans, multiple. And we know that at least two of them say that they're trained Marxists, but all of them believing in Black liberation theology, and at least two identifying as queer activists. There is also talk about spiritual roots and even witchcraft. Witchcraft. Not wearing a head and riding on a broom. But witchcraft as is widely practiced by millions today. Look at this article. This is the Gatestone Institute. It is Black Lives Matter Part 2. Gatestone Institute has an article about we will burn down this system. And it's quotes from Black Lives Matter movement leaders. And that article, as you get into it, has actual quotes talking about the spiritual content of the movement. That then led me to another article. Check this out. This is on a blog, and it's talking about the connection between BLM and witchcraft, and quoting various people involved talking about a particular form of spirituality. And in this particular form of spirituality, witchcraft is widely practiced. So the blog by Dean W. Arnold says Black Lives Matter deeply aligned with witchcraft. And then it's got signs of, you know, witchcraft, witches united against racism and things. In other words, they think they're doing this for a good cause. We'll show you another article that actually gives you quotes and things that are trending on Twitter, have been in recent months. Well, there is a spiritual component. There is a small minority of people, yeah, from all backgrounds, but coming together with joint vision and cause, which then somehow the society bows down to as a whole. The more you understand where it's coming from, the less inclined you'll be to bow down to yourself. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll get to your calls when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have been saying that the spirit of the world, the spirit of the age, is driving a lot of the political correctness in today's society. And everyone has to line up, bow down, display their allegiance to it, even though it's only a small minority that actually drive it. And then once the thing becomes framed, your orthodoxy will be tested by whether you bow the knee or not. And the great challenge is to determine to stand for what is right, to be determined to be a champion of justice and reconciliation and redemption without being forced to bow down to a system or a mindset that you differ with. All right, so let me give you a little bit more background about some of the radical elements of the BLM movement, Antifa, some of these other things, and the connection with witchcraft. There's an article on LifeSite News, excellent Catholic website, and it says that witches and Satanists have teamed up with leftists to destroy America. You think, oh, come on, what a crazy headline. Who believes anything like that? Well, there's a quote from the article. You can research, check the links, that says this. The witches do not hide their involvement in the violent protests. Mashable reports that witches covens are actively engaged in hexing police, whom they accuse of brutality. They especially target those who are risking their lives to stop the riots. The witches also cast spells asking for protection for protesters that confront the police. Witch activists use their dark arts as cutting-edge weapons for those who want to engage in a more spiritual class warfare. The hashtag, #WitchesForBLM, serves as a meeting place for practicing witches who want to learn how to cast protection spells, draw occult signals, and hex police. 5 days after the hashtag started, it garnered 10 million views on the TikTok app. Why on earth did that happen? Witches for BLM movement? Is that any different than the witches who've been gathering for years now to hex the president or ban the president or other things like that, widely documented publicly, proudly, for several years running now? Is there a surprise? That doesn't mean everything the president does is good or right. Obviously not. But you have to ask, where's this coalition coming from and why? You think, oh, man, you're just dreaming all this up. Okay, then please explain this to me. Have you seen the images of Bibles being burned in Portland? In the midst of one of these rallies starts, BLM becomes Antifa. Who else is involved? Whatever the groups or the individuals are. And interestingly, largely whites in many of these cases. And you know, use in one case, one of the protesters uses the N-word on a black policeman. Oh, yeah, that's really Black Lives Matter. Right, sure, sure. So one gentleman tweets this about the burning Bibles. And he says, left-wing activists bring a stack of Bibles to burn in front of the federal courthouse in Portland. This is Ian Miles Chung. He said, I don't know what burning the Bible has to do with protesting against police brutality. Do not be under the illusion that these protests and riots are anything but an attempt to dismantle all of Western civilization and upend centuries of tradition and freedom of religion. See, I've been saying, shouting it for weeks, that the protests, the riots will turn against us, the people of God will turn against the Bible, will turn against our beliefs. It didn't take a rocket scientist or a prophet to see this coming. And that's why I tweeted this. And by the way, burn the American flag, burn the Bible. Now there's the connection drawn between the two in a more intimate way than even be real. But it's all going to be on the enemy side. So I tweeted this out. I said, first they burned the federal buildings. Then they burned the churches. Now they're burning Bibles. Rather than asking what is next, we should ask who is next. Now, obviously, you make a statement like that, as my dad would have said to me as a lawyer, as I was growing up in a legally minded household, he would have said, who is they? Who is they? Yeah, I worded it like that in a large, somewhat ambiguous manner. But the they is the rioters, the protesters, those who've picked up on this current spirit of the age, which has elements of being anti-American, which it is, which has elements of being anti-authority, which it is. And then obviously there are good things we agree with, anti-police brutality, anti-racism, where that exists. Yeah, we together repudiate that. But ultimately, you trace it back, it's anti-God. And that's why so many of the people that will join on most enthusiastically are the most outspoken anti-God, anti-Christian people out there, including Hollywood elites. All right, let's take some calls. 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think is harder, to do what Scott Cunrad did, a white pitcher with the San Francisco Giants, while all of his teammates knelt? He stood, said, hey, I only kneel to God, and there are aspects of the BLM movement that I have differences with. Or a black basketball player, Jonathan Isaac, who stood while everyone else knelt. He didn't even wear the BLM shirt. And we'll get some quotes from him, but he made clear similar reasons. There are aspects of the movement I differ with. I can stand for black lives without doing that. And to me, things ultimately come down to the gospel, and the gospel being the solution, and all of us sinning in different ways. We'll listen to his quotes in a minute. Which is harder? What do you think? Just want your opinion. To be a white person standing, then you're obviously a racist. You're going to be branded that. Or to be a black person standing, you're obviously disloyal. 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to David in Staley, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. I'll go right to it. And thank you once again for allowing me to speak.
Yes, sir.
I think it's pretty much right down the middle. And I'll explain why. If you are an American of European descent, then of course, people are going to automatically assume that you're going to go against anyway. And then if you don't go against it, and if you go with the political correctness, then, of course, that's a pressure on you to do that, to be accepted. So that's a heavy load. So some people will accept you, but they only accept you because you are doing what they want you to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the other side, being an American of African descent, you're going to get labeled as a sellout. You know, it's the terminology that's used.
Yeah.
As a sellout, a traitor. But what helps the American of African descent is that that person tends to be kind of hard-skinned to that anyway. So then that person is able to fight that. So sometimes it's a clash, but they're able to rise above that. So I think it's almost even,
yeah.
You know, but I think you made an excellent point earlier. So if you cut to the bottom of all of this, this is an anti-God situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And we all know that for every one person that does right, there's always another one or two that's going to slide in that group and they're doing wrong. So everyone does not hate God that's doing this right
yes,
now.
Sir. Yes,
but
sir.
You have those factions that are in there. And I thought it was excellent how you brought those points about with the witchcraft and then, of course, just the haters of God, the lack of order as far as gender is concerned, the order of gender. I think, you know, the scripture says that in the last days, you know, men would be lovers of themselves. And I think people have always attested that to homosexuality as opposed to attesting that, no, they love God. They love themselves more than God.
Mm-hmm.
They
yep.
want to tickle their own ears more than God. And I think you said it earlier. I mean, you're a very intelligent man. You brought in all of the parts about people on different factions who normally disagree will come to agree to attack one particular facet of something that's being argued right now, which is this right here, right now. So, you know, as far as going back to that once again, I think it's kind of even.
Yeah, David, it's a conversation my wife and I had. Then I ended up posting a Twitter poll, and then the responses on Twitter were very similar to what you're saying. There are those unique challenges. And then, yes, absolutely, there are people kneeling out of righteous conviction. They feel it's a right thing to do, and they are God-fearing people, and they want to show solidarity. And then there are others that just kneel because it's the spirit of the age, and someone could stand for wrong reasons, but it's what we have to do, and thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. But what we have to do is determine to come to deep convictions about what we believe is right or wrong, to come to deep convictions before God. What hill am I going to die on? There are plenty of things where to get along, I'll compromise. To have harmony, it's like, hey, my view is not important. But then there are hills I'll die on. And if I lose everything for it, so be it. Here, let me just put something out for you. I was on a show the other day. It was an online interview. And the gentleman said, all right, I want to ask you to convince me to vote for Donald Trump. I said, well, that's not my big goal. I'm voting for him, but I'm not telling others to vote. I'll explain why I'm voting for him, but I'm not endorsing him. I'm not endorsing him saying, hey, I'm encouraging everyone to vote for him. I was asked last night to be part of a group of people that would be like spokesmen for Trump on different networks and things like that. You know, someone reached out to me, not from Trump's campaign, but someone else. Would I be willing to do that? I said, no, it's not who I am. It's not my role here. So I wrote Evangelicals at the Crossroads. I lay out the evangelical case for Trump, the evangelical case against Trump, and then how we can maintain our Christian witness while voting for it. But ultimately, say, look, the biggest issue is that our witness is strong before the society. That's even more important than who we vote for. The vote's important, but even more important is our witness before the society. And we have to be able to unite around Jesus while we have differences over Trump. We can't savage each other in the process. So I'm not going to die on that hill. But the, you know, the pro-life issues, the pro-family issues, the pro-Bible issues, these are life and death issues to me, and they should be for all of us. So again, little things, we make concessions all the time. We do it in the workplace. We do it in the family every day, right? You make little concessions. You do it all the time. You do it with friends. You do it in the church. You do it in ministry. It's like, hey, I can live with that. That's fine. Not a problem. But there are other things we have to draw lines in the sand. As I've said many times, we need hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. Hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. It's essential if we're to stand and do what's right and have the influence that we're called to have. The darkness is always going to hate the light and try to snuff it out. Fact. But we've got to shine anyway, because if we don't shine, then the world will be plunged into deep darkness. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, we were scheduled to be in Israel for our special tour in May of this year. We postponed that because of the virus till October, but things are still not normal up and running in Israel. And because of that, to be safe, we have put it off to March. It is the trip of a lifetime, an incredible spiritual experience that it's indescribable. I mean, we've had people coming multiple times because they're so blown away by the trip and so much to take in. So to find out more, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. But March, we'll be here before you know it. Just get me out of 2020. Get me out of 2020. Let's listen to what NBA player Jonathan Isaac, who I understand is an ordained minister, listen to what he had to say when he was asked why he didn't wear the BLM shirt or why he didn't stand. He's speaking through a mask, but I think you'll be able to hear him clearly enough. This is what he said.
So you didn't kneel during the anthem, but you also didn't wear a Black Lives Matter shirt. Do you believe that Black Lives Matter?
Absolutely. I believe that Black Lives Matter. A lot went into my decision, and part of it is, first off, is my thought that, you know, kneeling or wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt don't go hand in hand with supporting Black lives. Black lives are supported through the gospel. All lives are supported through the gospel, that we all, like I said, have things that we do wrong. And sometimes it gets into a place of pointing fingers about which wrong is worse and whose wrong is seen. So I feel like the Bible tells us that we all fall short of the glory. We all fall short of God's glory, And that at the end of the day, you know, whoever will humble themselves and seek God and repent of their sins, that, that we could see it in a different light, see our mistakes, see people's mistakes in a different light, or see people's evil in a different light, and that it would help bring us closer together and get past skin color, and get past anything that, you know, that's on the surface and doesn't really deal with the hearts of men and women.
Now, the thing that's so interesting in all this is that Jonathan Isaac, in saying this, is pointing to redemption as well. And it's been pointed out that the current spirit attitude that is driving much of the BLM movement, which again we distinguish from the important statement that Black Lives Matter, that the driving force is often one of anger and resentment, whereas Dr. King and others with him were pushing an attitude of redemption. So with real repentance, with real change is real redemption. There's a difference in spirit. Okay, one more clip from Jonathan Isaac. This is what he said.
I knew it was going to be a tough decision. I knew it was going to be something that people had a lot of questions for me and questioned my heart, and questioned my love, and questioned my morality for not wearing a t-shirt or taking a knee. You questioned who I am as a man. So I think, I thought about it a lot. I leaned on God's word and his promises, and I leaned on people in my life that are there to just, be around me spiritually and protect me, and cover me. So, like any country, America has its issues, it has its problems, but I'm grateful for the freedoms here and the freedom to play basketball and the freedom to do what it is that I want to do and the ability to protest, to not protest, to do what you want to do. So that's pretty much where it goes for me.
Yeah, again, takes tremendous courage to do that. I bet, though, that most of his teammates said, hey, man, you do what you feel is right. That would be my bet. That would be my hunch, simply because of a certain solidarity and respect that would exist within a team. But either way, you're going to get flack for that. Oh, and then he has an injury early on, and people are like, aha, you see? That's the world we live in today. It's ruthless, and it's ruthless on all sides, friends. Let's face it. There's a lot of ruthlessness in our culture. And you pay a price when you go against the grain. I remember a Japanese woman explaining to me in Japanese culture that the blade of grass that grows too high gets cut down. Tremendous pressure to conform in certain ways. And it exists in the church. It exists in the world around us. Again, we need to be people with hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, we won't go there. Let's go over to Carla. We won't go to Carla. Look at that. And they happen to be from the same city. The same city. And we lost both of them at the same time. Now, you may have a conspiracy about that. Maybe something happened in the city. Maybe the power went out in that city. Maybe there was an alien invasion as from Mars. Okay, which leads to a funny story. Let me just chill for a bit here, because we can often be very intense on the broadcast. Some years back, trying to remember where our studio was located at that time. So I'm thinking back. It was sometime, a good number of years ago. And somehow, as we were taking calls on different subjects, people wanted to talk about aliens, as in from outer space. Do they exist in UFOs? It's like, okay, really, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but got different callers, and one woman, I'm a Christian woman, I love the Lord, I'm in ministry, let me tell you, I saw it was UFO and aliens and the whole bit, and they're weighing in from all these different perspectives. And the phone lines were literally jammed. I mean, literally jammed, which often happens when we open things up for discussion, every line taken. And I said, okay, look, no more calls. I'm going to take the calls that we have, but then we're done with this. We are done with questions about aliens and UFOs. It's just this. And if it's one thing, if I had a guest on who's an expert in this and alleged abductions and things like this, but it wasn't. It's just a different day, different show. And every phone line taken, I'm looking at my screen. They're all pulsating, right? Every phone line. And suddenly, boom, they disappeared. Bing, 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 bing. And there was no system breakdown. We've had it where there's a system breakdown, something happens to the phone lines or whatever, the internet, but it didn't happen. They just, ding, disappeared. So my theory was that we were getting very, very close. We were getting very, very close to disclosing major truth about aliens. So they pulled the plug before we could do it. Now, some have theorized that the people from the same city that disappeared were raptured, but then does that mean the rest of us weren't believers? So we dismiss that. All right, let's see if we get someone who's not raptured or abducted by aliens. Andrew in Raleigh, North Carolina, are you still there?
Yes, Dr. Brown, I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you. Go for it, man.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to what we were talking about earlier. I want to talk about how a lot of this goes back to the lack of discipleship, and I'm specifically talking about the people of my age group. I'm 22. I was a student at NC State, graduated recently, and I recently got saved, but a lot of us are not discipling, and I'm guilty of this. Recently, it wasn't until recently it moved to my heart. Said, "Hey, what are you contributing to the cause?" I see a lot of my young friends who are going to a lot of these protests, and that's good. Civil rights protests, 1964, the March of Selma, all those were great contributing things. Especially a lot of them were not anywhere comparison to today's measures. But today, a lot of folks are. It's a very toxic notion that you're supposed to hate where you're from now, and that the land of the free on the hill is actually a bad place. And so a lot of things have been distorted. There's a lot of false negatives, but I actually see a lot of it as a lack of, we're talking about the lack of discipleship, is a lot of people don't know the word of God. For example, there was a picture of a girl who was protesting, and she had her shirt off. She had her curves protected, but her shirt was, you can see the majority of her skin, and she said on her stomach, it said, "God loves abortion." And so my question is this. Wow, I'm really kind of, I feel for her, because do you think she actually knows the word of God? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So in other words, my friend groups, these people who are attending these things, and I hate to say it, but birds of a feather flock together, and Black Lives Matter, look, do Black Lives Matter? Absolutely. People say, say it. Yeah, there's no problem with saying that. Unfortunately, the group, the organization, is a very proclaimed Marxist organization.
Yeah. Let me just jump in and say that we've been drawing attention for weeks and weeks and weeks now to the radical roots and where this is going. So while we don't just say words, we want to stand together where racism exists and confront it, where injustice exists and confront it, not just say words, but confront together. But it's interesting you mentioned the God loves abortion. There is the spiritual side that claims that this is God's way, and that redefining marriage and family, this is God's way. But when you watch progressivism go, you watch it go long enough until it ultimately denies its roots and its foundations. And Andrew, thank you for calling in. And I'm glad that you've come to know the Lord. You're absolutely right. Putting our roots down deep, getting good spiritual roots down, knowing the Bible well, understanding why we believe what we believe, that's the key that then translates out into all these other areas of life. Let me say this last thing. Those of you who are old enough to remember the civil rights protests, they weren't burning Bibles. And you had church leaders who were respectable church leaders often leading the way. Oh, all too often, white Christian leaders were late coming alongside. That's sad but true. It's a sad indictment that there were Christian leaders who were white that were slow to get involved with the movement. Thankfully, things shifted. But in point of fact, the civil rights movement was birthed in many ways out of the church and out of biblical themes of liberty and freedom and equality. It's very different than the spirit of what's happening today. Let's get our roots down deep. Let's be immovable and unshakable.